Are dents and scratches putting a dent in your day? Introducing Roger Steen Crash Repairs Adelaide, your trusted solution for automotive woes. With over two decades of expertise, Roger Steen Crash Repairs guarantees top-notch service, restoring your vehicle to its former glory in no time. From minor dings to major collisions, our skilled technicians handle it all with precision and care, using state-of-the-art equipment and techniques.
Roger Steen Crash Repairs saved my car. It looks brand new.
Fast, friendly and reliable. I wouldn't trust anyone else with my vehicle. Don't let accidents slow you down. Visit Roger Steen Crash Repairs Adelaide at 14 Penner Avenue, Glynde, for quality service you can count on. And here's a special offer just for our listeners. Mention this podcast and receive a $100 discount on your repair. Roger Steen Crash Repairs Adelaide. Excellence in every repair.
Previously on the Game On Podcast.
Yeah, and then right through to the age of 12 when we went to, we moved to Port Lincoln and played with the Boston Football Club down there. So they were the two clubs that really we sort of cut it through our junior career.
And you did most of your schooling at Port Lincoln, mate?
Yeah, so we did end of year eight at Kimber Area School, and then we went to the high school, Port Lincoln High School. So,
yep,
really great grooming ground down there. Some really high quality footballers that we come up against. Some really outstanding junior Indigenous players that we played against. Obviously, the famous Mallee Park Footy Club.
Yes. Yep.
And you know, against the Burgoyne boys, dads, and the Pickets, and all them the Davies over there, famous football names in the Port Lincoln area. So, yeah, we were playing A-grade footy at sort of 15, 16, played in the local Mortlock Shield as 16-year-olds. And that was really a taste of sort of, you know, really playing against adults, getting a little bit of an understanding where the benchmark was, where we thought we could take our footy, and obviously a massive Port Adelaide zone over there where, you know, rich recruitment. Obviously Norwood these days, but still a very rich recruitment ground for Port Adelaide back in the day.
And back then as juniors, were both you and Shane down in defence, or one at one end, one at the other?
Bit of everything, really. I mean, being a little bit taller, I suppose you get thrown into the ruck. So I was probably more the ruckman. Shane was sort of more centre half forward, but I was a little bit taller than him, a bit more physical. So that's where I played majority of my junior footy, and until really the ages of 17, 18, which we can get onto further. But that was sort of where I cut my teeth. I played forward a little bit, but that was my craft. I loved it. I loved being a ruckman as a junior, but and I was a state ruckman with Sam Smart in 91 under Russell Ebert, Pete Carey.
Sportscast SA presents Game On. Game On. South Australian's destination for everything sports. Local, national and international sports. AFL football, soccer, basketball, golf, baseball, tennis, cricket, and any other sports played in this wide world. And we're going to have a blast doing it. So sit back, relax, and let's do this thing. Welcome to Game On.
Welcome to Game On. My name's Pete. Once again, Malcolm is in the studio. Daryl Wakeland, part one, they're talking about the Mallee Park Footy Club, and some very, very good players have gone through that system. Obviously, being a recruiting ground for Norwood now, hopefully they can pick up a couple along the way as well.
Yeah, hopefully. Daryl was great value in that as well. Greatly appreciate his time. And yes, it's certainly a huge recruiting area back then, and some famous names.
Daryl Wakeland, part two, coming up later in episode today. So let's get into Around the Grounds, mate.
Around the Grounds.
Now, as per usual, we'll talk the SNFL, SNFLW, and the soccer. But today, we're going to start off with the AFL Hot Topics. We're going to get to the Crows and Port Adelaide a little bit later. But the AFL drugs policy making waves in AFL circles, is this much worse than what we expected?
Personally, no. Let's remember that the AFL is the only sport which is doing voluntary testing. Now, the players at the moment could go, right, stuff you. We'll just abide by WADA. We'll only have the testing on game day. Out of that, it's a huge issue in society. Don't dare out of that. And people are acting like, oh, this is only Melbourne and sort of headhunting there. That's crap. It's every club. It's reality. It's life. And look, while I think Dan March can go a bit overboard in his role and support of the players in general, I think in this one he's right, where it says, don't dare think that this policy hasn't exactly saved a few people, players, and got them back. Mm-hmm. So if the policy was just on game day, we'd be going, oh, well, there's no problem at all.
Yep.
So let's get a bit more real and a bit more about society in general.
Yep.
And look, I admit, yeah, we're older. And look, back then, it was only alcohol. We walk out of pubs, and we, especially Adelaide Uni Footy Club, would be singing stupid Bob Neil songs, etc.
Yep.
Where
Sweet Caroline going left, right, and centre.
Exactly. Where, you know, we probably sing a couple of songs which would get us, you know, go R-rated. But nowadays, you walk into town, and I did. I picked up my son one night, and I walked out. I'd parked in my car 2:30 in the morning. First time I'd been out at 2:30 on a Saturday night in town for a bloody years.
Yep.
And I'm just thinking to myself, cocaine, ice, amphetamines as people walked past, and you could feel the anger.
Mm-hmm.
Just totally different. It's society, don't dare think. Yeah.
Is it the case that it's sort of been done a little bit sneakily as far as that's going? Because it does reek a little bit of the Essendon drugs saga, which we want to try and get over, but it does sort of have that feel about it.
No, I don't think to that extent. Let's also remember Essendon's own words were it's a human exploratory drug lab.
Yep.
So I think that's a little I see where you're coming from, but I still think there's a difference.
Is it also a case of it's not actually performance enhancing? Because if players are pulling themselves out with mystery injuries at the last minute, it's probably not as enhancing as what we all think. So,
Look, a previous guest, Neil Craig, to his credit, because there are still quite a few Crows players, more than questioned Ben Cousins that he's the only person who ever burnt Nathan Van Berlo off, ever. Nathan Van Berlo, don't worry about his footy, but as an athlete, him and Kane Corns were absolutely elite. And they still question that. Craigie, where's your proof?
Yep.
Get on with it.
Yep.
So I respect Neil with that as well. Respect Neil in so many different ways. But out of that, I think we're probably jumping at shadows a little bit.
Fair call. I wanted to bring it up because it is going to be a topic that is going to be discussed, obviously, throughout the year. And, I was a little bit miffed initially that the AFL came out and almost sort of said, look, you know, this has all been done above board and, you know, it's not a good look for the game, that's for sure. And that's really what it gets down to.
It is questionable, yes.
Yep. All right, let's get on to this week's gather round. It's sort of snuck up on everybody a little bit. Well, it has for me anyway. Which game are you looking forward to most? And we will talk about, obviously, the games a bit later on, but just as a bit of a teaser.
I'll probably, because I'm involved in the two games at Norwood, but I'm really looking forward to the Richmond-St Kilda game. Look, spoke to Barmy yesterday, catching up with him on Saturday morning at Saturday at Nord. So things like that. And that went and had a look at Melbourne train this morning. Made goodie buy a copy of my book on the Melbourne were training. Yes. I'm quite happy with that.
We'll promote that on our socials as per usual.
And of that. So I just love the feel. And there I am this morning just talking to people and people who just, it was one family, Melbourne supporters. You know, they'd been here earlier for the game on Saturday, first time they'd ever stayed in South Australia, and they were asking, what tourist spots? And, you know, I'm talking about the wineries and all that sort of thing to them. So it's almost like you're an ambassador as well for South Australia.
Exactly.
And look, even with that, I remember last year walking in, can't remember now whether it was Friday or Sunday, and people going, do you know where Nord Oval is? And I said, yeah, I probably know where Nord Oval is more better than my own bedroom, you know, sort of thing.
Yes.
And just helping out there and that. So
it certainly has that feel again like we did last year.
It's
a buzz
feel.
It got sprung on us a little bit last year and we weren't sure what to expect. This year we're we know what to expect, but we're still being surprised in many, many different ways. And I think the people that missed out last year were desperate to get over here this year, and it's going to make it a great event once again.
You know, and as I said, I've probably 20, 30 people this morning at Melbourne. I dare say it'll be still be the same, even with the Crows, mm-hmm. even though it's South Australian. There'll still be people come over from interstate in that regard.
But it's
a great thing for the state. And let's too remember that this wasn't coming to South Australia.
Mm-hmm.
This was going to Sydney. And the fact that South Australia, through Malinauskas, managed to get it, through Peter Malinauskas, I think something which should be lauded. It's a huge, huge achievement.
I mean, I know on the other side of people are going, you know, hospital ramping and stuff like that, but this is for the economy to help fix some of these problems. So you've got to balance it.
Yeah.
You've got to be balanced with it. It's a great event. Really looking forward to talking about it a little bit later on with our teams when we start talking about them. We'll keep on with the hot topics. Score reviews, umpiring blunders, has it got out of control?
There's been more boundary umpiring blunders this year.
Mm.
There's been an extraordinary.
Now, remember, there are two boundary umpires on both sides of the ground.
And you then wonder if the positioning just isn't right. Looking at that boundary umpire for the Rioli mark, where he marked it in the grandstand, mm-hmm. I just looked and I'm thinking, how have you not managed to pick that up? It was.
There were two umpires.
The field umpire was there. He can't overrule the boundary umpire. No,
but he could have given him a bit of a look.
I think he could have communicated more.
Yep.
But then he blows his whistle to call the boundary umpire back. That's giving the defensive team time to get the numbers behind the ball, which is going against their instructions as well.
Yep.
So I get that as an umpire, but I just think, hang on, guys. It's not hard to see where the ball's a mile out of bounds. And just, you know, you had Higgins the week, great goal.
Yes.
But he kicked it while he was having a hot dog. It's been bizarre.
Is it a case of that they're a bit shy after last year's Crows-Sydney game that
I think
umpiring rules and reviews seem to be a little bit more, but also
I think
almost afraid?
Goal umpiring, like, one's been called for a review and we go, well, come off it. That's a goal or that's a point.
Mm-hmm.
Back yourself in. Yeah, you're actually there. And has it actually helped the game, mm-hmm. these reviews? I think at the moment we'd be going no.
Yep.
So, you know.
We'll get back to that one. I've got that one in our last topic for the day. We'll talk about that a little bit longer. Has the Brisbane-Vegas trip have ripple effects through the playing group and could derail their 2024 season pretty quickly if they don't fix it?
Yeah, you can question it. You also wonder how much is media, how much it is. Look. Things have been happening forever.
Mm-hmm.
Let's remember that Andrew McLeod and Tyson Edwards played for several years at Adelaide without speaking to each other, but still on the field, kicking into each other.
Yep.
I wonder if we're jumping it there a little bit. Just not sure. But you've got a question at the moment that, you know, Brisbane go from grand finalists to struggling. Tell you what.
But this has been a trend, though, that has happened for many, many years. That they're losing.
It's either one or the other. They either come through and win it the next year or bomb completely. Yeah. That seems to have happened quite a bit. So, yeah.
Now, on the flip side of that, have Melbourne answered the questions or the burning questions from the preseason with their off-field dramas?
We're certainly helping. Put that W in. And I thought the Port Melbourne game was the best game of last round, standard-wise as well. Huge, huge tick then. And, look, having come from Melbourne training, it was interesting watching it. And I said to the guy next to me, I said, it's amusing watching the head coach, that he's just the overseer out there, where the head coach used to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Williams was taking drills and other assistant coaches, and Goody was just wandering around. So, yeah, it is completely different than the old days. So.
It's a bit more of a managerial role, like the soccer.
Very
almost.
Much so. It has.
Yeah.
And I actually even thought of that there. It reminded me of an English soccer manager. So, yeah.
There you go. All right, we'll keep on with our burning questions. Should the opening round be a country games only, so that way all teams get to play, but also taking the game to the people for opening round?
You're talking about SNFL?
No, I'm talking about AFL, mate.
Yeah, but then you've got to get the grounds mm-hmm. thing. People don't realise how many things you've got to tick off on grounds. Like, Nord Oval is the only SANFL ground which ticks off the requirements media-wise to have the space where the Greater Western Stand becomes. And let's remember, too, when it becomes an AFL game, it's completely out of Nord's control. It's not us whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
it's an AFL game. Well, they require all that space for corporate and media. So, I think opening game. Look, I didn't mind what they did in Brisbane, and I see the point of it.
Mm-hmm.
Brisbane, and you know, in terms of the rugby states, I get that.
Totally agree.
But then also remember, if you want to call it opening round and then round one, whatever, that round then had over 400,000 people. I don't think you want to take away that impetus from the start of the year.
Not at all. Just throwing it up there to get all teams involved in opening round. But I do understand the eastern states or the northeastern states getting their time in the sun. But is there a way that we could potentially do it so that way everybody is involved in that rather than all these buys that seem to be happening for the first five or six rounds?
I think you could have every club play one game in their country at a country area.
Well, I mean, they do the community series. That's why I sort of put it on the agenda thinking, well, could they potentially do a community style opening round? Maybe not.
But then you've got to remember that's probably taking away a home game. That affects your membership, what you take there. And it is a multi-million dollar business. It's not a kick and a catch. So, I think it's probably too hard.
Fair call. We move on. Brisbane, is their window closing? We did talk about them sort of bombing a little bit at the moment and some off-field dramas. But usually the teams that have been successful usually last for about 6 to 8 years, their window or their cycle. Brisbane are coming towards the end of that cycle.
Yeah, they get Ashcroft back, and they've got his brother to come as well yet.
Yep.
And that's gonna be the same as the two Dacosses together. They're both incredible talents. And he'd adapted. He was dominating AFL footy immediately last year. So I think that's huge. I'm not writing them off yet for a while. And that they're probably Zorko's probably the only player at the moment. Zorko Lions, who's fringe anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's only Zorko out of that bit at the moment.
Yep. So. It's going to be an interesting watch over the next couple of weeks for Brisbane. Again, I'm not writing them off either, but starting from 03-04, not ideal.
It's a huge game for them against the parade.
Yeah.
It's against North Melbourne. Yes, okay, they should beat North Melbourne. Yeah, we agree with that. Nord Oval, though, small ground. You're going to be plenty of contests, crash bash. At the home of football. So, wait and see.
Anything can happen.
Yeah.
Will West Coast or North Melbourne remain winless for the entire of season 2024?
No, they play each other at some stage.
Well, they do, but which one of them is likely to be?
I've got North Melbourne a long way in front of West Coast.
Yep.
Yeah, West Coast, I think their list is terrible. They made some shocking decisions. Yeah, and at the moment, you go through their last 2.5 seasons, they're as bad as Fitzroy at the end. So I think North are far more progressed than West Coast are.
Exactly. All right, we did have a bit of fun with this one on our socials. Is the Hawkins phone saga sort of a storm in a teacup because he was let off with a fine?
Yeah, but I think there's also got to be a bit of common sense about it. And if someone said, what's happening with the weather and he glimpses at it.
Here's the thing, right? He's a farmer.
Yep.
So if he's giving the weather report, I'm trusting him 100%. Yeah. That's really what it gets down to. He'd be watching the weather like a hawk.
Yes.
No pun intended. On a regular basis. So if he sort of said to the guy, look, just give me a look at the radar. Let's see what's coming and what's not coming as to how he might be able to re-prepare for, obviously, them entering the ground. Initially, they were only told 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was a 43-minute delay.
I think it's, again, I think that was a common-sense decision, just a warning, hey, look, no, you can't touch your phone because of betting and all that. We can't have that because that's very strict. Like, same thing with cricket. They get there at the start of the day, they've got to hand their phones. I missed Callum Ferguson with a text one day in terms of tickets.
Yes.
Thinking, Ferg, what are you doing? And then spoke, and the next day said, no, we'd handed our phones in.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's very strict. Yep. They're ruthless about it.
And look, I can totally understand with the whole betting side of things. Yep. So I totally get it. All right, the big one that's come across the desk, obviously we knew about this previously, but it seems like it's really ramping up now that all the AFL executives are in Adelaide for Gather Round, is that Port are pushing along, I believe along with the Crows a little bit, in removing themselves from the SNFL to get a bit of momentum up for a national reserves competition?
Oh, it's going to happen. Look, it was going to happen years ago, and then somehow it – and this is well before COVID. You know, I know that the clubs were prepared, told, start picking out players, start preparing, getting ready, and then it shelved. So this has been in the planning for a long time. So it's not a surprise mm-hmm. whatsoever. What I want to see happen when it does happen, SANFL start earlier, start immediately after the Big Bash. Use that 6 or so week period, which mm-hmm. I think AFLW have been stupid mm-hmm. enough to give up.
Mm-hmm.
That's when SANFL must start. Double headers, jump all over it. So if, you know, Nord play Sturt, West Adelaide play Centrals,
yes.
your Western Centrals tickets get you in as well.
Yes.
Just some common sense and negotiate stuff with bars.
Yep.
There's always around it, which I think the SANFL have got to do for the good of the game. And it's ironic. Well, I've actually spoken about that with a couple of guys from West Adelaide today. We were talking about it.
Yep. I think the idea of double headers is good and that yeah. you can share it around for the first 6 or 8 rounds to each of those clubs that could host those games. And like we talked previously about night games as well.
Yep.
But do we see Port leaving the SANFL after 155 years a really big event for the SANFL because they are a founding club?
Unfortunately, in reality, it's been Port Power Reserves for quite a number of years. If you'd said that to me years ago, massive, huge, but not now. Mm-hmm. You're not playing Port Magpies anymore. It's just only a name. It's not like it's Port Power. So I just, you know, I admit I probably don't. I get it to some extent.
Is it the AFL
clubs want their team players to travel yep. and all that? But I don't think they're going to a stronger comp, and it's going to cost you so much more. Mm-hmm. I don't get that side of it. So
is it the romanticism of SANFL football with, you know, Port and Sturt and Norwood and Port and Port and Glenelg and everybody else that sort of doesn't like Port Adelaide as well? Is it a case of that?
Look, I think it was, but for me,
yep.
Nord Sturt, Glenelg are the rivals now, not Port.
Yep.
As much as I hate to say it, look, say it.
Question without notice, should Port Adelaide have a team in the SANFL that they continue to support through bringing up a local club in the area or combining a couple of local clubs within the area? Is that something that can keep the Port Adelaide SANFL team going? Again, question without notice.
I don't think there's enough money. I really don't.
Yep. Totally get it. All right, so this week's rising star was Harvey Gallagher from the
Dogs.
The Western Bulldogs rising star. Had a year, basically, of illness, which made him return to the workforce a little bit.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on players of that age doing a year in the workforce?
Well, I think I've always yep. thought the draft age should be 1 year high. I think it's crazy that yep. you're doing year 12, which is such a big year where you've then got to nominate with studies and all that. And let's remember, the overwhelming majority don't get drafted. Don't only think of the few who do mm-hmm. get drafted. The overwhelming majority don't.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always said it's absolutely ridiculous to have the draft in the year of year 12.
Absolutely.
I've always said they should be 1 year higher.
All right, mate, let's take a very, very quick break. We'll get into last week's games and then this week's games in the gathering.
You're listening to the Game On Podcast. We'll be right back after this short break.
All right, we'll kick off with Port Adelaide. A narrow loss against one of the informed teams at the moment, but what could have been?
It was a good game. Probably Radaglia's mark is the classic error. Yep. It was just crazy. Like, you'd expect an under eight to take two steps forward and make sure that he marks it or stops the ball from going over mm-hmm. the goal line. It was an amazing error. Like, let's be honest, that had been an Indian or Pakistani in cricket, we'd think match fixing.
Yep.
So it's ironic that we're talking about betting and that error occurred. Like, I'm not saying that, but it was so bizarre as an error.
It certainly was.
Yeah, Port again. Also think with Port at the moment that Horne Francis has been out injured. So,
well, you lead me into my next point yeah. is that the Horne Francis injury, is that a cause for concern long term for Port Adelaide? Are they playing the cautious approach right at the moment on the basis that, you know, they're realistically, they're going to be playing finals unless something completely goes awry from this point onwards. They've shown that they've got the form to go into September. I won't yeah. say deep into September because there's a stat here yeah, where they're win-loss against top eight teams isn't exactly great. No, so they need to rectify that as quickly as possible. Is it a case that they're sort of playing the cautious approach, or is his injury a little bit of concern for long-term?
Well, it's only been 2 weeks with a hammy. I wouldn't jump at that yet. And if there was, say, 5 to 10 out with hammies or other things, well, then, yeah, but not one player.
But he's a young player, though, and you don't want your young players having hammies so early in their career. That's where I'm sort of...
You don't want it, but no. It does happen.
Yep. Fair enough. And that leads us into our next point about talking about their win-loss record. Are they a bit of a flat-track bully?
Yeah, you can certainly question that because of their record against top eight sides and two. And that game, up for grabs in the last quarter, probably a couple of things. Probably the sling tackle was a bit unlucky against Rosie.
And a couple of missed opportunities in front of goals.
But that's happened for a long time. And as Timmy G said, that's where you've got to question them still mentally, that they consistently still miss those goals and against the sides don't finish it out. So there is still, I think, a big question against Port in that regard.
So leading into that then is Port Adelaide against Melbourne won all the key stats and yet still lost the game.
He didn't win the one which counted.
Is this the game that could they could rue later on in the season?
Yeah, possibly. You know, bit early to tell, but it was certainly a game up for grabs, which they probably should have won and didn't.
Yep.
And there certainly is a history of that.
Now, is mistakes a good thing for Port Adelaide right at this very moment? Does that give them time to turn it around against the good teams? Could it actually be their Achilles heel in 2024?
Well, it's probably going to be the next couple of tests of the big games, you know, if they then follow it through. And let's also remember, they were down against Richmond at halftime and remedied that and then came home. And Richmond did beat Sydney on the weekend. So let's, you know, out of that, I still think they're one of the best sides.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk about Adelaide. The Malira injury now puts their back line under further pressure. But does it open up a couple of different options for them?
Well, obviously, I don't want to see the player miss a year, but in reality, I think Malira should have been dropped anyway. So it's really ironic that Miller and Murphy have got injured, and yet you can certainly have a case that neither of them should have been in the side.
I would have liked to have seen Malira a bit more in the midfield.
Yeah, and even down forward.
Correct.
He did play that down at centrals, kick five in an SANFL final,
yep,
playing half forward. So, yeah.
But does it open up options now of putting Laird back to halfback?
Yeah, Laird's got to go back to halfback. Yep. You can't have Laird and Crouch playing together. And Crouch is demanding a spot, so Laird goes back to halfback. I can't work out why that hasn't happened.
So now that opens up another option for a Rankin or a Rochelle to get some midfield minutes.
Billy Dowling. Yep. Dowling should have debuted by now. He will debut this week, and he can play. I rate him. I've commentated him. Yep. Rate him highly.
Now, Matty Nix was on Fox Footy on Monday night, I believe it was. He talked about potentially, or he threw in there about overcoaching. Do you think that's about right? Because we did sort of allude to it a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about it, going, you know, they're a year on, they're expecting to do different things, they've tweaked it a little bit.
Well, I think Craigie in the interview said that. Said, you know, you get to the point where you think you're the only one who can do things. I think you do. When something's going badly, you try and grab it back yourself. And probably don't think through three things. We're all guilty of that. So I do. I would say that at the moment. Yeah, he's probably trying too hard. It might be better off just having a beer together.
Is it a case of the team itself is trying too hard? Yeah, because they did put expectations on themselves before the start of the season. You know, and they were lofty expectations in the scheme of things with... We think potentially, and we're sort of seeing it a little bit now, is that they overachieved last year.
And confident in terms of, we all know how much the game's played above the head. And, you know, Taylor Walker, not sure really on him with his back. And he's not playing well, and you think he's dominated the last couple of years, you know, so.
Yeah, but he's not getting the delivery that he got last year because you can't blame him.
I'm not blaming him.
No, not at all. But I'm just saying that people are jumping on text going, oh, he's too old, he's past it, he shouldn't be playing. Well, it's a bit of a case of back when they were doing this rebuild that the ball was getting delivered in slowly and bombed in. And Whereas last year he was able to have such a good year because he got that quick, fast ball movement and he got the one-on-one. And he doesn't get beaten. He's a bit like Tom Hawkins. Doesn't get beaten one-on-one very often as long as the ball's moving in quickly.
Well, at the moment, I don't think there's one player for Adelaide you could say has been really good over the three rounds, mm-hmm. you know, which is extraordinary. Like Dawson's been average.
Yep.
Crouch has been okay.
But do you think Adelaide is getting more respect from their opposition this year because of what they did last year?
Yeah, maybe, but I don't think it was a case of Fremantle beating Adelaide with good footy. Both teams, I thought, were pretty average.
Yeah,
Adelaide managed to be six goals worse. Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, Richmond showed that effort can do the job, which they obviously did against Sydney on the weekend, and we'll talk about that one a little bit more when we talk Richmond-Sydney. But is it a case of that's the blueprint where effort can sometimes, you know, sort of beat skills?
Again, happened to be standing, Mark Williams addressed the West Adelaide coaching panel today, and I happened to be standing there, and that was exactly what he was talking about.
Yep.
So, yeah. Yes, it can. Effort, making the person earn the contest.
Play your role.
And even to the point of, it was an interesting point, Mark Williams said, Kevin Sheedy is a coach, concentrated on percentage is a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because that then governs so many things. And that's also a way of measuring effort and that as well. So it's just keep at the contest.
Absolutely. Now, is Riley, the assistant coach, not Riley O'Brien, we'll talk about that as we go along, but is Riley a huge loss for the Crows?
Yeah, Riley's a massive loss. Mm-hmm. Look, I still can't work. I think Adelaide didn't target Nathan Bassett and not even interviewed, I find extraordinary. I just don't get.
You've stolen my thunder because I was just about to say, is someone like Nathan Bassett an option for the Crows?
Not even interviewed. Unbelievable.
It is. Now, for me, the Crows are nowhere. Tell me their top five players, obviously, at the club. I'm not talking about on their performances this year. I'm talking about their top five because at the moment I'm struggling to find who their top five are.
Oh, you are. You are really struggling on this top five.
Yeah, and this is why I say the Crows, I feel like, are in no man's land.
Oh, I agree. Like someone like Laird at the moment is just really average. Yeah, mm-hmm. He is still one of their top five. You know, Dawson, mm-hmm. probably still Rankin. Mm-hmm. After that, toss a coin. Yeah, at the moment they're in no man's land, and I can see Melbourne absolutely pantsing them.
Mm-hmm. Well,
tomorrow night.
We'll talk about that a little bit when we talk about it. But, you know, Melbourne are the number one stoppage team and Adelaide at last in the comps. So there's a massive discrepancy there that needs to be fixed. But, yeah, I'm struggling in that Adelaide have no trade value either. This is the other thing that worries me as a Crows watcher, in that they are in no man's land because they've got all these list cloggers and they've got a couple of top-end players, but some of them haven't gone on. I mean, we hope the best for Fogarty. Glimpses of brilliance. He really needs to establish his number one role. Rochelle looks confused as to what his role is at the moment. Is he in the midfield? Is he in the forward? What should he be doing? Pedler's almost taken a step backwards.
I think
there's too much pressure on Dawson, hence the reason why we're seeing some average results, because he does feel like he has to do everything.
There's got to be questions development coaching at Adelaide, and there has to be for years, that so few take that step to the next level. No one this year looks better than last year.
Mm-hmm.
Not one single player, which is ridiculous.
Yep. Do we see Adelaide possibly being 0-5 or worse?
Oh, I think it's distinctly. Distinctly.
All right,
Redbacks would have killed to be none for five.
we'll leave Adelaide there. I think we've
probably
made the point that we're a little concerned as to the Crows a little bit being nowhere at the moment. Some major losses down there and some missed opportunities as well. All right, let's get on to last week's matches briefly. We've got Collingwood taking on Brisbane. Entertaining game, not only for the 0-3 results for everybody or the 0-4 results for everybody, but Collingwood really put Brisbane to the sword once again.
Yeah, only seen the highlights because obviously I was at the home of football for the Nord Sturt game. Mm-hmm. So seen the highlights and, Collingwood just a bit too polished probably. Had a couple of decisions go their way as well.
And they had a little bit of their mojo back. Brisbane, obviously, again, like you, only seeing some of the highlights, but Brisbane were very straight and down the line, so they weren't really taking the game on, and I think Collingwood sort of worked that out pretty early and had them matched right from the get-go. Carlton defeating North Melbourne by 56 points in the Good Friday game.
Yeah, just did what they had to do. You know, efficient, workmanlike performance.
And their forwards are getting plenty of the ball at the moment, which is good signs as well. We have talked briefly about the Dockers and the Crows. My biggest probably concern from that match there was Adelaide's score of less goals than Adelaide United. Or the same amount of goals as Adelaide United.
Yeah.
Obviously, Fremantle winning by 35 points. Essendon and St Kilda. This was an entertaining game right down to the wire.
And Essendon just sort of probably did that. Were a bit more composed, I thought, at the end. And Essendon and Saints looked like they ran out of puff.
What do we think about the Essendon edge? Is it a theme? Because it's good for footy clubs. I mean, I've been involved with footy clubs for a long, long time. You do have a bit of a theme for the season. I know that the media have probably dubbed the theme a little bit more than the club internally, but it does seem to be a little bit of a theme that they've come out with a little bit of an edge this year.
Yeah, Brad Scott's pushing the boundaries a little bit. I thought it was a bit over wah-wah a bit in the Sydney game. Like, let's be real, there was one incident reported, and I still think Peter Wright was distinctly unlucky.
Yep,
and there was nothing else. I thought that was a mountain out of a molehill and a bit of footy bullshit theatre as per normal.
As per normal. Obviously, we've talked about the Port Adelaide-Melbourne game and the Western Bulldogs and West Coast Eagles. What can you say? The Bulldogs have done what they've needed to do, and West Coast probably couldn't beat the bye at this stage.
Yeah, they lost an internal during the week, West Coast. They kicked a point. They didn't have anyone to take the kick out. Yeah, no, they're terrible. They're as bad as Fitzroy were in the last couple of years. Yep. Unbelievable that such a huge club with so many resources is so bad.
But they're in the same case of Adelaide a little bit, not as bad as West Coast are obviously worse than Adelaide, but they're in the case of no man's land where they do have a lot of list cloggers because they did keep their older guys on a little bit. Now they've got this sort of
They thought middle. They were still in the window and did all that. What they gave up for Tim Kelly was ridiculous. Yeah. And then they kept Natanui, Hearn, etc. Kennedy. They were an old side. Yeah. So, yeah, I can see them struggling for a fair while.
And this is why I sort of compare them a little bit to Adelaide, not on the playing side of things, because I think Adelaide's got a little bit more talent there. But the list clogging that happens, that they've got these average middle-range players, they've got some good young ones, but they've got too many old ones as well.
Then it compounds. Like, Harley Reid goes through a year, and they don't win a game or win one game or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be thinking, geez, Mill, come back home, looks a hell of a lot better. So those things then compound as well. Mm-hmm. So
obviously the precedent's been set with Jason Horne-Francis leaving after a year as well. Richmond and Sydney, this was entertaining. We did talk earlier about whether Adelaide should be adopting what Sydney are doing from an effort point of view, and they really took it up to Sydney. Richmond.
Yep. Fantastic in terms of effort.
Mm.
You do wonder whether Sydney took them a little bit lightly, mentally weren't quite as switched on as what they should have been, and this competition, it comes back to bite you on the bum pretty quickly.
Is this Sydney's hiccup for the year? Or I know there's probably going to be a few more, but is this a little bit of the hiccup that they needed?
Maybe. We're going to have to wait and see. We don't know how. Again, then we've talked about the loss by Port to Melbourne, how much this loss hurt Sydney in the end. You know, will it cost them a top four berth at the end of the year, home finals, that sort of thing? We're going to have to wait and see.
Absolutely. And Richmond Lynch, the hamstring again. Is that cause for concern?
Well, he's out for probably 10, so it's massive.
Mm-hmm.
They lose Bolter as well, and Baker, who I think was distinctly lucky to only get one game.
Yeah.
Because it's outcome based. If he hits the player there and he causes a concussion, he gets 4 to 6. How Peter Wright incident is regarded as worse than Baker's has me stuffed purely because it's outcome based. It's ridiculous.
Perfect. All right, mate, let's take a very, very, and I mean a very quick break because we've got to whiz through this week's games.
Yep.
You're listening to the Game On Podcast. We'll be right back after this short break.
All right, let's start off with Gather Round, Thursday night, Adelaide v Melbourne. Obviously, you're going to be picking Melbourne. Probably going to be in the same boat.
Yep.
Can we see Adelaide causing an upset?
No.
Move along. The Lions v North Melbourne, Nord Oval.
Yeah, I'll go for Brisbane, but go Dylan Stevens and go the Roos.
Absolutely. We move on to the doubleheader, obviously, Friday night, Port Adelaide v Essendon.
I'll go for Port too,
but I think Essendon are going to provide a little bit of a fight for a period of time. Yep. I don't think they're going to get over the line, but I think they're going to provide an interesting contest for a little while. Sydney v the West Coast Eagles up in the Adelaide Hills at Mount Barker.
I'll go Sydney
as well. The Dockers v Carlton at Adelaide Oval. I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, I'll go Carlton.
I'll go Carlton as well.
It'll be a good game.
Absolutely. And then, obviously, the night game at Adelaide Oval there is the Bulldogs v the Cats.
Yeah, I'll go the Cats, but I do give the Bulldogs a distinct opportunity.
I do as well, but no, I think Geelong are a much better side than what we give them credit for at the moment.
They're doing what they have to. So I'll go Geelong, but I do give the Dogs especially. It's also be interesting because Geelong have effectively almost played two games this week. You stop for 40 minutes, so you got to do that. Mm-hmm. So it'll just be interesting. You know, they're saying they've got through it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to wait and see yet.
It's going to be an interesting one to watch.
Hamstrings, groins.
Yeah, exactly. And the Bulldogs obviously coming off of a good win.
Yeah.
You know, personally a good win. But, you know, you're coming up against some really good opposition. Yeah. So, all right, the Suns v the Giants up in the Adelaide Hills at Mount Barker as well.
Yeah, I'll go GWS.
I will go GWS there. I think they are a team to watch. Interesting game here, Richmond v St Kilda at Nord Oval.
Yeah, with Richmond's injuries, I'll go St Kilda.
Yeah, I think St Kilda are going to bounce back as well. Yep. And then to finish us off, we've got Collingwood v Hawthorn on Sunday at the Adelaide Oval.
Yeah, I'll go Collingwood.
Go Collingwood there as well. All right, mate, we're going to take a very, very quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk the cricket.
Yep.
Hi, I'm Rachel Spawn, and you're listening to the Game On podcast.
All right, let's kick off with the cricket, mate. There's actually been a lot of cricket news in the last week. Yeah. They're taking the AFL's lead with a bit of promotion or cricket news 366 days a year, but Dizzy resigns from the Redbacks and the Strikers effective immediately.
Yeah, I do wonder what things were going on behind the scenes. Jason's attitude was a little bit interesting.
Is it a case that decisions had already been made or he'd already made the decision that maybe the time was up?
Possibly. So I'm not 100% sure there.
Who's going to be a good fit for the Redbacks? Now, obviously, we're recording right as the news is broken that Ryan Harris is the interim coach, and that's quite an interesting way of putting it. But I'm assuming that is on the basis that they've got some interviews still to do.
Yeah, and I haven't even said this to you off air, Pete, but wait and see on the name Tim Payne. I'll leave it at that.
All right. Interesting. There you go. Do we think Rhino might be a good fit as well?
I hope so. I think Rhino would be.
Deserves a chance?
Yeah, and I was disappointed several things this year with selection. Mm-hmm. I think wasn't hard enough. Fraser McGurk's two shots here, I would have, as I've said previously, see you later, come back with your fair income. I just thought players got away with things. I don't think there was high enough standards.
Yep.
I think Rhino wouldn't settle for that as a person. I can't work out that Jason did. Yeah, that still has me stuffed.
Well, that probably leads me to my next point is have the Sacker done a review and are some of these changes as part of that review?
Yeah,
it might be internally.
Yeah.
They obviously haven't come out and said that they've done an external review.
Have really with Tim Nielsen finally going. So, which recommended in the – yeah, there's been – word that rumours around that for a few years in that regard. So be careful on my wording there, Pete.
No, that's
you might
okay.
have to go through that one.
But is it a case of that this is – the Sacker have had enough, this is a dawning of a new era, or is it a case of this is all for show?
Yeah, look, let's just
That's my worry as an outsider. I know you're involved in the cricket and you can't say a whole lot, obviously, because of, friendships and information that you do
careful.
Know. Yeah, absolutely. But is it a case of that, it is time that they do draw that line in the sand and the Sacker needs to step up?
I want to see consistent selection, people earn their spot, go with South Australian youth.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a bugbear that we recruit so much, and then they get more opportunities than homegrown South Australian talent. That's something which has angered me for a long, long time.
So is this a case we're following the WA model a little bit?
Hopefully.
Mm.
Honestly, you know, someone like Brad Davis did not get anywhere near the opportunities he should have.
Mm-hmm.
Just using him as a name.
Yes.
And congratulations to Brad for breaking Cam Borks' all-time run-scoring record for Sturt in the grand final as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think he's won. I want to see Tom Kelly not come in and bat four. I want to see the kid bat five or six to start with. Yep. Just things like that I think should have been done better.
So just some smart decision-making. Yep. All right, let's move on to the Australian team. Adelaide secures the day-night test against India in December 2024, the 6th to the 10th of December. Should be an absolute belter.
Oh, look, I think it's going to be a huge series. I think India's talent goes deeper than Australia's.
Yes.
Well,
per head of population,
yeah, exactly.
We'll sort of dictate that.
A couple of quickies as well and that. So I think they're going to be hard. But, yeah, I think it's great news in terms of, you know, you're going to look at pretty close to a sold-out.
Yes.
Sold-out test match. You know, it'll be huge. You know, you're looking at probably 200,000 people.
If it goes four or five days. Yep. Totally agree. And just to finish this off on the cricket, mate, Harris, Stoinis and Agar and Nessa not being offered Cricket Australia contracts, but Matty Short has been offered one.
Yeah, which is good news there. I was probably a little bit surprised. I thought Spencer Johnson might have from his performances in there. And you say, oh, he hasn't done enough in the other form of the game. Yes, true, but nor is Nathan Ellis, and he got one. So I can't work out why Nathan Ellis got one over Spencer Johnson. So that was a little bit bewildering. And that actually affects you on a state thing. If Spencer Johnson had got an Australian contract, it gives South Australia more things, more avenues to go and that. So, yeah, I was out of that. I think it's interesting that Renshaw has been the spare batsman for the years but didn't get one.
Mm-hmm.
They're effectively saying at the moment, we don't really have any confidence in any young batsman. Now, I think Nathan McSweeney would have been the next cab off the rank.
Yep.
300s for the year. Yeah, probably a little bit too much of a gap between his good and his bad. I think he was also forced in that way that he was put up to number three instead of being left at four.
Mm-hmm.
So he was facing the new ball all the time. So I do think he's, out of all the players in Australia, I think he's the unluckiest one not to get a contract.
Yep. There you go. All right, mate, let's take a very quick break once again and we'll move on to the SNFL, the SNFLW, the soccer and Darryl Wakeland part two.
Hi, I'm Mark Harity and you're listening to The Game on podcast.
All right, let's talk SNFL, mate. Round one, Nord v Sturt on Thursday night at, as you call it, the home of football, the parade there. Entertaining game for the first half, but Nord really finishing off the game very, very strongly, which was pleasing.
It was good. Great size crowd. There was 4,109 declared.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might have had a five in it personally.
Yep.
It
looked like a five. Yeah, it definitely did.
Yeah, and a couple of us talking about that the next day. Yeah, it was a good game. I was pleasantly surprised with Nord having so many new players.
Mm-hmm.
How soon Cote, O'Neill and that Simpson fitted in.
Mm-hmm.
Murley and Lord were okay across half-back as well. So
yep.
Sort of everyone did their bit. And, yeah, it was a good result, actually.
And Panos turning back the clock with that goal, which is a...
Just a king delivered.
Just a lazy goal of the week nomination, and yeah, it was pretty impressive how he spun out of that. And if they can utilise him up forward a little bit, I think he's going to play a good chunk of the year and be very influential if they get the ball in like they did.
Yeah, they're just going to be careful with his body and that. So he'll sort of govern that. He sort of work. I think he goes and he's left a little bit of control himself when to go on the ball and come off, and he went into some centre ball ups. And we probably needed that bigger body. And it isn't interesting. What are Adelaide crying out for? A big body midfielder. Gee, there's been one in the SNFL for a bloody long time.
Yeah, fair call. Sturt would have been a little bit disappointed not getting the chocolates against Nord. We rate Sturt. I continue to rate them as well.
Yep, certainly that do.
Would be a little bit disappointed. Probably their ruckman going down was probably a little bit of the turning point.
It was because Boyd dominated in the ruck.
Yeah.
Gave a silver service. So, yeah, that was crucial. Probably the thing about Sturt, there's still a question mark with them up forward. So that's probably the one area there. Mm-hmm. But it was a good game. Absolutely. Really was a good game.
North Adelaide v Centrals. Centrals getting the chocolates there. Very accurate in front of goal.
Yeah, ran the ball pretty well from the judging, from the highlights, from talking to a few people. Mm-hmm. As we said last week, we tipped them to be the big improver.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that as well. South Adelaide taking the Crows pretty much all the way, but a big goal there from Dowling, who we've talked about should be getting a run at AFL level this week with that big bomb outside 50. Heartening for South Adelaide.
Yeah, and a few of their juniors. Really glad to say young Howes kicked three. Mm-hmm. I was impressed with him last year. Wheaton did okay. Look, young Draper's injured at the moment, who's the best one of the kids too. Mm-hmm. So probably better than most South people expected. So mm-hmm. that was encouraging.
Absolutely, and we did talk about that they're going to try and keep that younger group together for a period of time, and maybe this is the start of South Adelaide's resurrection up the ladder again. We move on to Woodville West Torrens v West Adelaide. Congratulations to Sam Jacobs on win number one, but they did it in pretty impressive fashion.
Yeah, again, I think they might be okay, and I fear West Adelaide.
Fair call. And then the last game of the round on Good Friday, which was at Stratorama Oval there, Glenelg's home ground. Wow, the defending premiers were challenged a little bit early, but boy, when they put the foot to the floor, they put the foot to the floor.
Oh, they've got easily the SANFL's best forward line. McBean, Reynolds, Hosey. There's more options up there than any other club by a long way. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Now, we'll talk about round two matches next week because there's obviously a bye this week for the state game. So who are we expecting from Norwood potentially to make the state team? Boyd would probably be one.
Yeah, Boyd will play, I would think. Good luck to Jack Hurd.
Yes.
To young Rewalt. In terms of always called him that because dating right back to when I had him in grade two and he wore the St Kilda number 12 Guernsey.
Yes.
And that, I think he'll play. My mail is he'll play. Who's in the squad? Mitch O'Neill's in the squad.
Yep.
Callow's in the squad.
He was pretty impressive on Friday night
With his work rate, that he works to contest, so he might play. Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on it being played so early? I know it's all part of the gather round.
It's part of gather round. That's the problem. Look, in that regard, it's not great.
Yep.
But at least it's being played. Look, I actually would like to have seen the game at Richmond. Mm-hmm. I think they're the SANFL club who needs helping probably more than anyone.
Yep.
But I do see the bit okay down at Glenelg. We'll try and get people shopping down at Glenelg on the. Yep. I get that, but I'm not so sure that it's going to drag that numbers.
We're not looking for the big picture. There's no point in really doing the ladder because Woodville, Glenelg, Norwood, Centrals and Adelaide were all the winners. So they're all off to a great start. All right, let's move on to the SANFLW, mate. Round five. Central's just getting over the line against a plucky North Adelaide.
Yeah, Central certainly aren't having it their own way this year. Teams seem to have closed the gap a little bit on them. And, North Adelaide keeping at it, but just, can't get over the line at the moment.
Exactly. Norwood getting the job done against Sturt, which was an interesting result, really.
Probably the surprise was how convincing it was. I thought that game would be really close, and I wondered whether Norwood could quell Indy Rashid was probably the big question, but they certainly did a reasonable job. Indy still had reasonable stats, but nowhere near as damaging as the last couple of weeks.
Yep.
A really good result by Norwood on Good Friday.
Absolutely. Woodville West Torrens defeating West Adelaide there.
Yeah, so an encouraging result there for Woodville West Torrens.
West Adelaide, obviously, being one of the big improvers this year, have it their own way and a very good result for Woodville West Torrens. And then to finish us off, South Adelaide played Glenelg.
Glenelg and beat Glenelg. Probably the big thing there was Glenelg 2-12. So you question there, you just wonder if a couple of those changed the game. But I thought, as we've said at the start, South were the best side last year overall for the season, but didn't deliver the chocolates in the end. I still think they're going to be pretty hard to beat in the end.
Absolutely. All right, let's leave round six games for next week because they're obviously on a weekend off with all of the gather round and state footy going on around SA. Ladder positions, we've got Glenelg obviously still sitting at top, West Adelaide still sitting second, South Adelaide sitting third, North sitting fourth. Sorry, I thought it was a top five as well. All right, let's move on to soccer. Adelaide United playing Western United in Adelaide, and what can you say, a young gun with a hat-trick.
In what may have been his last game, too. Punda, we wish him all the best. So wait and see whether that was his last game, but that was the mail that it looked like it would be.
Absolutely. Winning score of 4-1, a much-needed win, just to keep a little bit of a sniff of finals alive for Adelaide United.
Still a very, 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 very outside chance.
Very much so. 9th v 10th, Adelaide take on Perth Glory this Sunday away, and then back to Cooper Stadium for MacArthur, who are currently sitting 4th. So, bit of a challenge there coming up for Adelaide United. All right, mate, let's take a very, very quick break. Once again, Darryl Wakeland, part two.
You're listening to the Game On Podcast. We'll be right back after this short break. Past players, past legends, past legends.
Yeah, losing like Everett, as we
lost
said.
Lost Everett, and we lost Lazar Vidovic, who was
That's right.
They were a good tandem ruck pair, and Spider was resting forward as well. So, yeah, it put a lot on Brett Cook, who was our third sort of string
ruck. Broken
Hill
boy.
Who did a great job in the prelim. Corey McKernan went down and did his shoulder from memory.
That's right.
So he was able to play a role that night. But, yeah, just couldn't quite get it done against a pretty handy player in Sean Wren.
Yeah, exactly. He wasn't exactly against an average player in the final. Yeah.
So what obviously St Kilda have been starved for success, and we know that. What was it like grand final week around St Kilda? Because everybody was clearly buzzing at the time, and you guys were favourites, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, incredible atmosphere around Moorabbin. It's very much a suburban local football club, no different to what we have over here. So you got thousands of people at training. Stan Alford obviously had experience in his own football career at North playing finals. And, you know, I thought we went into the game cherry ripe. It was a very disruptive week. Obviously, Nicky Winmar's father passed away
the day before.
Stewie Lowe had some serious family issues, and I remember late in the week it did become quite interrupted. But you know, we did the parade, did all that. We went into the game quite confident. We were still very confident. About 5 minutes to go in that second quarter, and but I just thought we missed a couple of opportunities, and instead of being 2-goal up, we probably should have been 4 goals up. And,
yeah, that's fair.
And then, they wore us down. They obviously got a huge amount of rebound off half-back through McLeod. And
McLeod went on the ball and Johnson, and good.
Johnson.
Goodwin,
and Johnson.
Goodwin was very good as well.
And then Jarman just bobs up.
Yeah.
Jars was amazing. Didn't get the match up early enough there. And, they come over the top. Yeah, you know, when you look back on it, it's a hugely talented football side. So at the time, there was a lot of them guys who were in their first sort of 10, 20, 30 games of football. But when you look back on it now, you know, a huge amount of talent, Hall of Fames across every line. So, and the same with St Kilda. It was two very talented football sides.
Did you feel it out on the ground that it was gradually slipping away? I know.
Probably in that third quarter, late in that third quarter.
Yeah,
you sensed that it was slipping away. We didn't get that match up for Jarman, but I also thought we just weren't generating enough ball deep enough. Wren sat behind the ball so well, like he always did.
Yeah,
and. Yeah, and that's life. We missed our opportunity.
You were mainly on Matty Robram, weren't you?
Yeah, I played Matty Robram, centre-half back, so I was okay. I played an okay stopping role, but certainly as far as intercept marking and getting more of the ball myself, I certainly could have contributed more. But, yeah, we missed our opportunity, sadly. It was a really talented squad that, we probably could have pinched one through that 2-3-4 year period.
Yeah, because 98, you're around the mark again.
Mm.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, we go, we probably go mid-year.
Yeah.
10-2, we're probably sitting first or second. And then we just petered out as the year went on.
Yeah.
And I think you just sense as the year went on, Stan was probably feeling the pressure a little bit. There was a fair bit of pressure. Just reflecting back on it and speaking to old teammates, there was probably a bit more going on behind the scenes with Stan and the assistant coaches than we really knew about.
Yeah.
Stan was brilliant for my career. He was brilliant for our club at that time. He gave us real focus, real consistency, real structure with our game plan. He was a great motivator. But certainly he felt the pressure, which can come in a club that's been, which has had a real lack of success over a long time. I'm rapt seeing them in the position they are now. They're a strong club. I've spent some time down there over the last 12 months with my lad as a father son.
Okay, is that in the pot? Is that a potential there? Because
I don't want to put pressure on him or anyone, but
certainly
like Port Adelaide, they've given him the opportunity to come down and be a part of it and experience what it's like and see the facilities and getting an understanding of what's required in a program like that. So
it's a bit unique, Port Adelaide. Wakes, it's a bit unique, Port Adelaide, this year that it's almost a few of you. Few of the kids competing to be the father son selection. There's a few, Montgomery, Rome Burgoyne, and your Colt Dillon. So that actually a bit ironic that Porter have probably got a couple of tough decisions to make.
Louis Montgomery.
Yeah.
Obviously, he drafted you this year. Rome Burgoyne drafted you. My lad's.
Was your lad the year after? Okay.
Still a 16-year-old, he's got a bit of time. But it's great. It's just good that the AFL clubs give these kids an opportunity to get a bit of a taste of it these days. And it
doesn't hurt qualifying for two clubs, Wakes.
who knows? Who knows what will happen? Both clubs have been brilliant for me.
That's good.
And my journey.
No, I do rate young Dylan. Did commentate him on the weekend. I think he's a genuine chance. And, see how he goes. He's a good kid. Comes from good stock. We'll probably leave Dylan enough pressure there. Do rate him.
Question is, what if he gets drafted by Adelaide? How are you going to feel about that?
Just get on with it. It's a place on an AFL list.
Good.
Place on an AFL list. I reckon that's the way your Colt would look at it, mate. So.
That's right. Any opportunity, who knows?
Yeah. And so, 98, and then eventually coming back to Port, Darryl, how did that all eventuate there?
So, 98 finished off that year. I fractured my skull, and I was actually reported in the same game late in the season, so I missed the first final. We had a double chance, but. Yep. We got knocked out by Melbourne in the final at the G. So we're going to the 99 seat. We'll end of 98, obviously. They make the decision to get rid of Stan. So we go into 99. Tim Watson gets appointed. And, I really enjoyed Tim. Alistair Clarkson arrived. Kevin Morris was an assistant. Andy Collins was an assistant. So it was a real change through that period. We probably bought some players into the club who were sort of second chance, certainly talented players like Tony Francis, Monkhurst, Sean Charles. A number of these players who were sort of recycled players, Tony Delaney. recycled players, but we moved out some quality young kids through that period. Joel Smith, Matty Lappin, Tony Brown delisted.
Yeah, that was a weird one. Really,
it was. We need, and sort of looking back on it, we just didn't have that. I suppose Tim just lacked that overall program to be able to nurture them young kids. Them kids were still 21 years of age.
Yeah.
Look at it, it's 22 years of age.
Tony
still,
Francis.
Still learning their craft.
Tony Francis speaks glowingly of Tim Watson.
Yeah, no, they had some sort of relationship, and I know that Tim went strongly after him, and he played some good footy for us.
Yeah.
You know, he was a real introvert, real shy guy.
Yeah, he is, isn't he? Yeah.
But it certainly changed the whole makeup of that group. We'd been extremely close since 95 right through to 98, and it totally changed that group over that 12-month to 18-month period. Yeah. Mind you, in saying that, the first year, I think we were sitting 10-1, 10-2. We had probably six or seven guys in the All-Australian squad, in the first cut. So, and we're all playing pretty good footy. I was playing some good footy, all our mids, all the usual suspects, Lowe, Harvey, Winmar.
Yeah.
But as the year went on, we just lacked a bit of, we're getting done from behind. It was a record game by Hawthorn, come from 10 goal behind. We just lost a little bit of leaf. And probably as you do, you lose a little bit of belief in your game plan. And then that sort of filters through to a lack of belief in the overall program. Players are very, you know what players are like. Yeah. They can sense stuff. They know.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got good radars. And
when a club starts, as groups. Any club, something just little starts to unravel a bit. Geez, it gets around pretty quick amongst the playing.
And, guys start looking over their shoulder. And,
yeah.
And it's all self-sacrifice stuff, and so you need some really strong senior leaders or leaders across the board.
Yeah.
I was made vice captain that year. I was 22, 23, and I must say I lost a bit of belief in my own ability. And, you know, you have as much confidence sometimes as those that believe in you. And I just felt that, yeah, maybe the belief wasn't quite there as we were getting deep into the season. Just some question marks over players that we knew they would cut it, but they just got questioned in ways that started eating away at the team.
And so then coming back to Port, how did that eventuate?
Yeah,
from there.
Did you know that was going to happen, or was that something?
No,
that,
so I had a year to go. My contract end of 2000, so 2000 season. We had 3.5 wins that year. Port initially reached out to Shane because he was out of contract. Shane had been offered a 3-year deal by St Kilda, but he'd missed most of the season with an Achilles injury.
Right.
He wanted guaranteed money. They said, we're not doing it. And then he got the medical assessment done by Port Adelaide, and great mate of mine, Dr. Mark Fisher, said, I can't support the medical. So then they asked me, even though I was contracted, had a year to go. They said, what are you doing? Would you like to come back? And Shane then got the opportunity, got picked up by
Collingwood.
Yeah. Played another 8 years. And they offered me a 3-year guaranteed money deal, great up and coming a group of young players at Port. And I sensed that the club wanted to make the most of it and get a good trade in to pick up another experienced player, which they did in Aaron Hamill. So,
yeah.
It's a bit scary looking back on it. It was a big punt by Port Adelaide to trade out a number 4 draft pick to St Kilda for me. So they had a huge belief in me, and I come back across. Yeah. The final straw, and I've shared this with Blighty in the back of the commentary box at times, but they'd done the big sales job to go up to Cairns to recruit recruit Blighty with a big check. And they had Max Hudgston, Barry Hall, Lowy, Halves, Berkey, I think it was. And I was vice captain at the side. And I said, well, do you want me to go on the trip? And they said no, because they'd already been obviously having trade talks. And I said, well, give me Blighty's number. I know I've heard he's committing to the job. Give me Blighty's number and I'll have a chat to him. And they said, nah, he's not taking any calls. And I said, that's fine. Thank you for that. And that's my that was my last sort of box I had to tick. So then I committed to Port Adelaide.
Yeah, that's I hate it when clubs bullshit. Yeah.
But it was it was a great thing for me.
Definitely.
It was I could not have come back to Port Adelaide at a better time under such a better group of people. And Mark Williams, a great mate of mine, David Hutton in welfare, Bobby Clayton, Bucky Cunningham, and the whole board were obviously Port Adelaide through and through, who I knew from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So go through, obviously, getting back to Port Adelaide, Williams as coach and, the sponsorship deal with Scots and maybe wanting him to move on. And you really had a mission to make 2007 your year.
2004.
Sorry, 2004, sorry.
We won't talk about 2007.
No, we'll talk about that later. You wanted to make 2004 your own.
Once again, young group coming up, you need to take your opportunity. And in the first couple of years, we didn't take that opportunity. We'd built a huge amount of talent across the squad. We'd brought in talent, Hardwick, Peckett, Josh Marnie. We all of a sudden, after 3 or 4 years, we had coming into that 04 season, we were winning a huge amount of games. We had lots of players around that 100 game to 200 game mark. And that was the year, and we had to do it.
Roger James has still got a hell of a lot to answer for. I call Roger Lord Voldemort because I blame him for Port winning the flag, mate. So. It's a standard joke, Roger. As you know, Roger's one of the great blokes. Roger.
The Norwood boys.
So Roger's actually got me in his phone as Lord Voldemort from me calling him Lord Voldemort. So it's a bit of a standard joke between us. And as you know, he was unbelievable in that final series. And to have seven of your over any club's first 10 touches, that's Brereton, Bartlett, the Dominator sort of stuff where he's never really probably got recognised enough for how good his final series was. He was incredible. Not just the prelim. Yeah.
He'd had some sort of ongoing knee issues.
Yeah.
It sort of caught up with him in 2005. Incredible user of the football, as tough as they come.
Yeah.
And some of the rules back then where you could just – you could take possession of the footy, hold it in, do another, have another ball up.
Yeah.
That suited him. He just had that style of taking hard ball, getting the contested possession at stoppage, getting through traffic, and then elite use of football
to
Fred Ray or Lade or whoever up forward. So, really probably pulled up his career 2 or 3 years too early due to that knee.
Yeah,
I know he went back and played a bit of country footy, but to have to train and perform at AFL level, he wasn't able to quite do that. So sadly, would have been great to see him play for another 2 or 3 seasons. And I think if we'd better have him fully fit and Josh Carr stay, we might have given it another shake the next couple of years. But we certainly, lacking a bit of depth through that midfield. You just can't compete, can you?
But what an experience playing in Port's first flag.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it was huge.
It really is. I speak about my two bookends, 94 and 2004.
Yeah.
At the club I barracked for as a kid, I was part of their zone on the Eyre Peninsula. I just can't. When you look back on it, you just look on it so fondly. All through the journey, through the G junior pathway, and to finish off in 04, coming back to the club, having done my apprenticeship at St Kilda. There was always a thought I'd come back, but I never really believed it because I enjoyed Melbourne life so much. But yep. It just felt right when I finally come back, and fortunate enough to play in one. And played another 3 years after that. But very special time for the whole family, really, and that whole group. As you are as a premiership team, you're very, very close, very yeah. much like family. And, we were fortunate enough to be inducted into the Port Adelaide Hall of Fame back a month or so ago. And Chock was there, and he was like a proud father with his children. And, it's amazing. The group just continues to get closer and closer as we have our catch-ups. And we obviously got our 20-year anniversary this year. That's going to be a special get together towards the end of the year.
Now, you talked obviously playing in the St Kilda grand final back in 97, and you sort of mentioned yep. that you sort of got a bit of a feeling that things were slipping away. Port Adelaide's first premiership in 2004. When did you sort of feel like things were turning your way against the Lions, who were red hot for 3 years previously?
Yeah, we knew that. I thought they'd outmuscled us a little bit through certain parts of the ground. We'd had a really good run in minor round games and pre-season games. We beat them in a pre-season grand final and quite convincingly. They had some genuine tough big game players. We didn't come up to the level in the big games. And we knew we needed to take that opportunity. We thought we had a bit better run than them through the midfield. We were going to run them off their feet. We had some guys banged up. I know they did too. Not enough gets spoken of Primus and Franco.
Yeah,
you know, Franco, I agree with third. That. Third in a Brownlow yeah. 2 years, Primus All-Australian Ruckman 3 years in a row. They go and change the ruck rule.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
I was about to say.
If he was playing now, he'd win another three All-Australians.
Yeah.
So they've changed the ruck rule back. But, you know, teams talk about having players banged up or so-and-so was out with injury or we had Lappin injured or whatever, but we had two genuine superstars sitting in the coach's box. Mm. So not enough gets spoken about that. And that happened for two of the 3 years that we were making a run for the finals. And we had some crucial injuries.
Yeah.
And we just didn't get that momentum. But 2000, crazily enough, 2004, we actually did get some momentum in the back end of that year. We had a lot of our midfield up and running. And we got the momentum at the right time to really push.
And Kane Corns did a fantastic job on Black too.
Shut him down, didn't
he? Yeah, I thought he was
incredible gun.
He was personally my pick for the Norm Smith in that. I thought he was incredible. And you just all did your role then, and
that's right.
Yeah, I just.
Well, everyone played their role. It's even Hardwick. He was losing his legs that year.
Yeah.
But Chock, coaching staff, they play. He was a role player. He would come in for 5-6 minutes on ball. Absolute battering ram, stir a few up.
Yeah, he sucked people in. Jeez, he was good at that. Yeah.
And then you had, Pickett was left to roam, and Peter Burgoyne played one of his best finals. And that midfield really, really was the difference for us. We stood up strong down back. We got some great rebound from Shawnee Burgoyne and Matt Bishop. And we had a real spread of goal kickers up front, obviously led by Brendan Lade and Toby Thurston's up front. And obviously the mercurial Gavin Wanganeen.
Yeah. Let's think he had done very little. He got you out of the lemonade and SARS in that prelim final, and him and Sean Burgoyne with the smother from other Port St Kilda player.
Brent Guerra.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, and I think. Yeah, it's well publicised. Gav hadn't had a kick in a month.
Yeah,
and you know, it's a tough position too, up forward, dead man's pocket. He'd play a bit of half forward, and coming off a almost winning the Brownlow in 03, off half back and back pocket. So it was a change of role, and he was getting on in years as well. He was 32 by that stage, yeah. I reckon, 31. So a few Ks under the legs. But, yeah, just incredible that, yeah, just guys like that can just pop up in such massive moments.
Well, I mean, in true Port Adelaide tradition, you got the most out of all of your players and everyone played their role in that grand final, and it certainly showed.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're going to celebrate it this year with some gusto, that's for sure.
Did a person I've got a lot of respect for is footy now, said David Pittman. Pitto was an assistant coach in that. Did you have that much to do with Pitto, just out of interest?
I don't have a lot. He was there, though, along with all the surviving assistants at the Hall of Fame. So I know he loved his time through that period. And he was very influential on that midfield group and that ruck group. Yeah. We had a number of ruckmen going. Obviously, Matty went down injured at the start of the year, still very influential. Yes. And then you had Lady and Brogan. We had an amazing depth with our ruck stocks through that period.
Yeah, you did, didn't you?
On top of having Barnaby French, who went to Carlton.
Yeah. And, yep.
Kane Ackland played a role, and so yeah, we had a lot of guys going through there, and genuine, top end AFL players.
And you said, so I think you're, as you called it, with Rog getting injured, really hurt the chances of the next couple of years. And that, look, 07, for as much as we'll muck around for the grand final being a cliffhanger at the opening bounce, you got through with a pretty young group there, and you were playing one of the greatest teams in history. And you can argue on paper, with how many All-Australians they had there that year and all that. Make a claim
As it'll show, that Hall of Famers who, they finally believed in their ability. And we'd had a very good run coming into finals. We've ended up going, I think we finished top four that year.
Yeah,
I think West Coast after Cousins. Cousins went down in the last quarter or third quarter.
Yeah.
And then we rolled over the top of them to win that first final to go into the prelim against North.
And we smacked North in that prelim.
Yeah. Bit of a soft run in.
Yeah.
We'd had a few guys a bit underdone and a few little injuries coming into that series, but we were in pretty good shape. We just lacked experience. Yeah.
I reckon the soft prelim final probably didn't help in the end.
Yeah, looking back on it, probably not. I thought, we still had 12 or 13 premiership players from 04. That's why I look at these sides anytime. Like even Port coming up against Richmond on the weekend, I think they had 12 or 13 premiership players, and I think you can never underestimate it.
Yeah.
But you still need it's the next 7-8 players who may only have. I think we had 6 or 7 players with less than 20 games.
Yeah.
So it was a real transition period for us through that period, and. I remember one moment in the game, and that's all. I don't really remember it. Yeah, I'd been brought back in for the prelim after doing a groin down in Geelong in round 22 or 23.
And Cassisi kicked the goal.
That's it. I think I'd only played. Geelong game was my first game in about 8 weeks, Yeah, the prelim was my second, so I hadn't played a lot of footy and certainly felt that way on grand final day.
And that was it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Did you play any footy at all after that?
I played a couple of country games. I went back to Kimber, played a few games. Port Lincoln, I played a couple games back there. But you soon realise you've still got to be fit. You've still got to cover the ground to enjoy yourself and have a kick. So, but that was good. It was good to go back and get back to your roots and see a lot of them people who are my mentors and great supporters coming through juniors. And really to get back there, celebrate it with my family and my parents. That's the most special thing. So it was a nice sort of full stop to my active playing career.
Did Port Adelaide Magpies approach you to maybe have a year back at the Magpies?
I think they may have. Yeah, they may have at the end of that year, and I was just done. I wanted to get into my pharmacy career.
Yeah,
and see where that went. I had some coaching opportunities. I was asked to go on the board at Port Adelaide, which I did through a pretty tumultuous period. But so that was an amazing experience. And but when you've been on a board in I think any board, especially a football AFL board, you can certainly fall out of love with your football club.
Yeah, I agree quickly. With that.
And
yeah.
I got to the end of that and I just needed some time away. And, which was good.
Now, Daryl, you've been in the pharmacy game now for bloody long, and very well respected in the pharmacy game too, I may add, and that. Father-in-law used to have another shop close to you down there, the late John Bertram. You and I have spoken a couple of times on that.
Yes.
And the shop's there. It's still there. It's a dentistry now place down there.
How did you get into it?
Yeah, with pharmacy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, just come out of school, really. I enjoyed chem and physics and whatnot at school, so I thought it'd be a pretty good job. I certainly weren't punting on a AFL career at that stage.
Yeah.
So, it was, okay, if I get into that, there'll be plenty of jobs around. I can travel overseas and get a job in the UK. I can work in hospital. I can own my own business. What are you really thinking as a 17, 18-year-old? But that's sort of what I remember I was thinking. So one thing led to another. Ended up getting in some ownership with a group who had pharmacies in the western suburbs. Late in my career, and it just sort of all went from there. Yeah, so I still own the pharmacy.
Yep.
Yeah, down there at Alberton, and we're at Arndale Shopping Centre and a few other spots around Adelaide, mainly in the west and the north. And, it's been a good career. It's certainly been, it's like any small, medium business. It's, it has its challenges, and the government certainly keeps you on your toes, and you need to keep evolving.
Yeah, but, you and Noel Allen, another one in the pharmacy game around the years.
I met with Noel only 2 weeks ago. Had a coffee, had a great catch up, and
old small Adelaide again, mate.
He's now he's just officially exiting from the pharmacy game in the next couple of months. So it's been an amazing journey for him. He's been a great, successful businessman here in Adelaide.
Did you say you were still studying while you were playing in your early career for obviously pharmacy?
Yeah, I did part-time study for 8 years, and then I did an internship over 2 years, a year and a half, at West Lakes and Alberton Pharmacies, who had the same owners.
Yep,
so, yeah, Tuesday was their day off. I would go and work in the pharmacy. I'd do a couple nights. And then I graduated in 2004, so talk about a good year. And then I sort of would do a bit of part-time work in the off-season and whatever else, and then got into ownership, yeah. So, no, it's been a good journey. It's been a great journey. I'm not sure how much I got left in me in the pharmacy game, but it's a good industry, but the government certainly wears you down after a while.
As Dylan,
this year.
Have you managed to impart on Dylan the same life balance sort of decisions and that, do you think?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, good. we talk to them all the time. You just don't know what's going to go on with your body. Love it. Yeah. Enjoy it.
Yeah.
Love being around your mates. Love, be grateful for being at a club like Sturt, who have a great junior program. He's been very fortunate under Dave Odie to be coached under Dave, and who's now moved to PAC, and he really enjoys Dave's approach to coaching and, simplifying the game, breaking the game down, and he loves his approach. So he's been very fortunate to have a junior coach like him. And, trying to encourage him to enjoy his school and to work as hard as he can so he have that balance. Yeah. So and he has
all right, Wakes, we'll let you out on this one. Your best top three players played with and against.
So with, best player R. Harvey.
Yeah.
Second, Tred Ray.
Yep.
Third, Wanganeen.
Yep.
Yeah, there'll be a few apologies there.
Yeah, that's okay.
Don't worry, he's a Nord supporter. I have nightmares, Greg Phillips. He's the one.
Yeah, and probably Timmy Jennifer in there as far as my favourite leader, best leader I've played with, and Primus. Best player against, David Neitz was always a handful. Power, strength, dead arrow kick. Wayne Carey, right next to that. Big engine, big body, playing in a superstar team with great rebounders off halfback. So you're always a bit nervous playing on him with Pagan's Paddock at Waverley Park back in the 90s. A lot of space to move around in the big fella. And probably Tred Ray before I went back. I'll tell you what, that was a relief when I came back to Port that I wouldn't have to play on him the next sort of 7-8 years. But he was a genuine up and coming star in his first two seasons. I'd play a little bit on him. Yeah.
Oh, looking, if he was in Victoria, like Pavlich over in WA, he'd be spoken to the nth degree. And don't worry, as a Nord supporter, we wore black armbands when Matty got with his then girlfriend, now wife, because, geez, the amount of quality he used to bring back to the parade before then were varied by the week. It was a shattering moment when he actually got serious. Geez.
Yeah, I did hear about his pre-mel form, but he was sadly missed from the eastern suburbs, I believe.
Oh, yes. We can discuss that off air at some stage, but yes.
Daryl, it's been an absolute pleasure having you and reminiscing, obviously, about your career and talking about pharmacy work and your family and kids. And, mate, thoroughly enjoyed watching you play and, wish you all the best for what's coming up in the future.
And definitely catch up with you at some time in the next few weeks too, Wakes.
Good on your mouth. Thanks, Pete. Really appreciate the opportunity. Take care.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you, mate.
Thanks, mate. Right,
bye. Bye.
Liking this podcast? Please like, rate, and subscribe.
And we thank Daryl Wakeland there, part two, for his interview. Obviously, we did that a couple of weeks ago. And, really great for him, obviously, to end up back at Port Adelaide and through that 2004 Grand Final series. Was instrumental in keeping a couple of key forwards there under control.
Yeah, we probably could have questioned him a bit more on the Alistair Lynch, Mark Bickley side of things.
Yes.
Bit of an oversight there. Obviously, we're also conscious how long we were going and that.
Yep.
But, yeah, look, he's a quality bloke, and we wish his cult all the best in the next couple of years wherever he ends up.
Absolutely. All right, mate, we're going to skip Happy Days for today because it's a huge episode, obviously, talking Gather Round and football. But we're going to skip right through to the Extra Time Big Finish.
Extra Time Big Finish.
All right, not too many questions on our Extra Time Big Finish today, but tennis, Novak Djokovic split from his coach.
Yeah, that was a total surprise.
Came out of nowhere.
Yeah. who knows what's happened behind the scenes there. But, yeah, very, very, very surprising.
Is it the end for Djokovic a little bit?
He's still number one at
the moment. I know. That's the scary part, isn't it?
Yeah.
But things are starting to just fall apart a little bit and change. Or is it the change that he needs to refresh in?
We won't know.
Interesting question, but we'll keep it on there. Australian rankings, Alex Diminor at one. At one in Australian rankings, but number 11 overall. Jordan Thompson sitting two at 33. And Popperin raising to 46 in the men's. And in the women's, Storm Hunter having a career high, 114 at number three. Daria Saville, who's obviously been able to get back onto the court at number 108, up seven positions this week. And Rodanova at 101 is the Australian ranked women's player. And obviously the Billie Jean Cup coming up as well, with Sam Stosur taking over the captaincy role from Alicia Molik. So we wish them the best with all of that. Mate, we did jump on them a few weeks ago as the NBL finals were getting underway, but the Tasmanian Jack Jumpers have created history by winning their first championship in only their third season in a very, very entertaining final series against Melbourne United.
Oh, it was huge.
Oh, it was, wasn't it?
God, looking at the photo of them and back in Tasmania, I reckon every single Tasmanian was there, and we didn't even have to count the heads twice. Mm-hmm. You know, huge crowd. Fantastic. Great for the sport. And fantastic for Tasmania, just awesome.
Is it a case of this might just sway the Tasmanian people towards that national team in the AFL?
Certainly won't hurt. And I reckon it does put more pressure on the government to actually deliver. You know, it's a state of political uncertainty in Tasmania at the moment.
Yep.
Huge political uncertainty.
Yep.
But that does put more pressure, I would think. Yeah.
Great for basketball. Great that it went five games. Very high standard through most of the finals games. And
yeah.
I think Andrew Gaze even said that one of them was one of the best games he's ever seen. Yeah. So, yeah, congratulations to the Jack Jumpers there, and champions definitely going all the way. We move on to NRL very briefly. Experienced coach Des Hasler in a little bit of trouble, or questions are being asked about giving his players an old-fashioned bake, which is normal, but really honed in on one player. What do you think, mate?
Yeah, it's probably because it's come out publicly. Don't think that stuff still doesn't happen. And, yeah, we've already mentioned a name earlier that we think he should be at the Crows, mm-hmm. and Nathan Bassett. And, geez, he was as good as anyone in that regard.
Yes.
Mountain out of a molehill for mine.
Fair call. All right, let's move on. So before we do, the Dolphins, the Panthers, the Cowboys, the Sharks, the Storm, West Tigers, Roosters, and the Raiders make out the top five in the NRL. Let's move on to golf, mate. It's not far away. LIV Golf heading to Adelaide at the Grange Golf Club, April 26 to 28.
And we will try and get Nick Haslam. I will ring him this week.
Yes.
And we will try and work that around when he's available.
So absolutely. Really looking forward to it. But a little bit like Gather Round, sneaking up on us a little bit quicker than we all expect. And before we know it, it's not going to be too far away.
Yep.
All right, mate, let's finish off with some general questions. And we did talk about it earlier with goal line umpiring and video review umpiring. But has VAR in the soccer got the right technology set up? And how far is the AFL behind them?
Still not sure. There's still enormous controversy here. And I still think, because the offside rule is such a high, hard rule, there was one in the Liverpool, and I watched them. Well, I thought that's offside, but they're saying it was 0.01 onside.
Yep.
So it's a hard one. Look, they're trying to say there might be tracking put in the ball at AFL level. You know, in AFL-wise, hang on, we've got the rules are the most grey of any sport in the world, like a reasonable amount of time to get rid of the ball.
Yep.
It's the exact wording. Well, yep. Everyone's reasonable varies. So I just think, hang on, we've got this sport which isn't black and white. It's not in or out like tennis and that. I think it's going overboard. It hasn't worked. And like, think of that Carlton-Melbourne game last year where they tried to show whether it touched the finger or not.
Yeah, no, I don't agree with that at all.
And after that, you're thinking, Tim, no, get on with the bloody game and just umpire it. So,
It should only be for goal line review. Yeah, but anyway,
even then I think it's going way over.
It is. All right. Should Sam Kerr be sacked as Australian captain?
Still want to wait and see on that one. It's a fair bit of he say, she say. You hear from her side and you think, gee, that's nothing. Then you hear the other side. So I just want to wait and see on that one.
Going to be interesting. Pitch invaders, where has this come from? Last couple of weeks, we've had two lots of pitch invaders. I do know that the Adelaide one has copped a lifetime ban, but it will be reviewed in 5 years.
Nah, bugger that. Lifetime and at least 10 grand.
But how's it come to this where we've just got these idiots who've decided that, you know what, jumping on the pitch is a good thing?
Yeah, got me beat.
How do we completely stop it? That's probably my next one. I know the lifetime ban, but how do you police that?
It's also that. But let's also go to, hang on, we stopped the game for lightning this week and encourage the crowd, get under cover. 36 security guys still out on Adelaide Oval, on the MCG, sorry. So are their lives worth less? Yep. Just seemed totally hypocritical. They're going players off, everyone off, but security guys, you can stay out there.
Yeah.
That don't make sense.
Yep. Totally agree.
I do have a rant.
All right, we'll get to that in 2 seconds. Yep. One more question for our general. Free agents, are any of these free agents that I'm going to mention worth picking up for Adelaide? Ben Ainsworth?
No.
Jared Berry?
No.
Patrick Dangerfield?
Yeah, but that's different.
I know that's different, but he is. Anyway, Tim English?
Yes, and he would have been here in the first place if the recruiters had got their way, not the coach.
Blake Hardwick?
No.
Will Haywood?
Yes.
Hugh McCluggage?
Yeah, I don't think he'll leave. I think if he leaves Brisbane, he'll go back to Melbourne, though. Yep.
Andrew McGrath?
If he changes from Essendon, I think he'll stay in Melbourne.
Fair call. And Cam Zerha?
No.
So there you go. I just wanted to throw that one in there as a little bit of fun towards the end. All right, let's finish off with a rule book rant.
Why are people comparing Ginevan and Joel Selwood? Joel Selwood was the best player in the competition at going low and hard at the contest and then coming up. It's up to the tackler still to tackle correctly. Ginevan is up and drops and looks to try and create that contact. They are as different as apples and oranges. It is insanity, Dwayne Russell, to compare the two. Absolute crap.
Mm-hmm. Well, he does drop the knees and then he lifts the arm, accentuates
totally different.
It. Do you think, it was a hot topic, which I'm glad we've left to the end for your rant. Do we think that he's being umpired differently?
He is, but he's only got himself to blame. He's made it a nightmare for the umpires. He was the one who did that video and sent it out, how he was exploiting it, how I tricked the umpire on this. Well, guess what? It's only going to come back the other way. Mm-hmm. You're not going to expect anything else.
Yeah, cool. All right, mate, we are going to finish up there. A huge episode once again. We thank Darryl Wakeland for his time in our part two of our interview. Huge episode, obviously, with Gather Round being here in Adelaide. As per usual, we promise to do better.
Yeah, and I'll be out and about trying to sell the definitive rule book. It's the biggest week of the year. Remember, Gather Round's not for that doesn't matter. It's rule book selling books.
Get into it, folks. See you next week. See you, mate.
In this crazy world we live in, we all need the distraction. Enjoying the show? Like, rate, and subscribe. Hook up and connect with us on social media @SportsCastSA. We'll see you next time on Game On.